Good evening and happy Pride weekend. I'm Greg Moralia, and this is the June 2026 edition of Outbeat News in Depth. A theme running through many Pride celebrations this year is resist. Resist oppression and fight back against things like bans on flying the rainbow Pride flag. Our first guest tonight is on the front lines of this fight. Charlie Beal is the president of the Gilbert Baker Foundation, and he's here to talk about a recent win at a site where Pride celebrations began. And in the second half of our show, Finn Dearhart shares his conversation with Court Vox, a somatic sex and intimacy coach. They'll be talking about Court's work and a special weekend that they're collaborating on together in Mendocino County this summer. So stay with us. It's all coming up next, right after your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, June 28th, 2026. This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of June 28th, 2026. The country of Japan is preparing to roll out a nationwide LGBTQ+ education program, a first for the country, aimed at increasing the understanding of gender and sexual diversity. The plan was approved by the ruling Liberal Democratic Party and is expected to receive cabinet approval. The plan stems from a 2023 Act on the Promotion of Public Understanding of Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity, and it requires schools to offer information about LGBTQ+ people and directs universities to train healthcare workers on sexual diversity. Advocates call it a baby step, noting that Japan still lacks nationwide anti-discrimination protections and has not legalized same-sex marriage. Observers believe the education initiative could gradually shift cultural perceptions, paving the way for broader legal reforms in the future. And here in the U.S., a new Data for Progress poll shows that despite years of political attacks on LGBTQ+ rights, most likely voters still prefer candidates who support LGBTQ+ people. 51% of voters said they would vote for a pro-LGBT candidate, compared to 32% who favor opponents, while 16% were just unsure. The survey revealed strong support for policies like anti-bullying measures in schools, mental health services for LGBTQ+ youth, and restoring specialized crisis lines. However, Gallup polling indicates overall support for marriage equality and LGBTQ acceptance has slipped since its recent highs. The survey also highlighted the influence of personal connections. 64% of voters who know a transgender person prefer pro-LGBT candidates. LGBTQ consumer behavior also reflects similar trends, with most shoppers rewarding supportive companies and avoiding those that retreat from inclusion. And here locally, a San Francisco Giants Pride Night turned controversial when three pitchers, including starter Landon Rope, wrote Genesis 9:12-16 on their caps, referring to a biblical rainbow covenant. The gesture, meant as a protest against LGBT pride symbols, stirred national debate and drew criticism from theologians and LGBTQ+ supporters. They pointed out that the passage speaks of God's universal promise of safety, not exclusion. Giants leadership faced backlash for allowing the display, while Roop insisted there was, quote, no hate at all in his actions. Clergy argued that using the verse this way undermines the message of inclusion and turns the symbol of God's mercy into a message of rejection for LGBTQ+ people. But Assistant U.S. Attorney General Harmet Dillon escalated the Giants Pride Night cap controversy by suggesting that Major League Baseball could face religious discrimination complaints. Appearing on Newsmax, Dillon said that if Major League Baseball enforces uniform rules inconsistently by allowing symbolic messages but punishing religious ones, players like Roop would have legal grounds. So far, Major League Baseball has issued only a warning for the hat alterations, which violate uniform policies. The Giants acknowledged that the players' actions caused pain to the LGBTQ community and expressed regret. Dillon's comments came on the heels of Vice President J.D. Vance's own remarks, implying that Pride Nights are no longer necessary under the current administration. And in Erie, Pennsylvania, City Councilmember Ed Brzezinski faced hours of public outrage after he deliberately misgendered Council President Tyler Titus, who is a transgender and non-binary individual. During a heated debate on June 9th, Brzezinski responded to Titus's call for order with, quote, "Yes, ma'am," sparking a wave of condemnation from constituents and local Democrats. At the packed city council session, 58 people spoke, nearly all demanding for his resignation or censure, calling the misgendering a deliberate act of harm to the trans community. Mayor Daria Devlin apologized to Titus for not intervening immediately. And here in Sonoma County, Sonoma Valley Pride made history this June 13th with a sold-out Pride dance at the General's Daughter, drawing 175 guests to the historic Victorian estate in the heart of Sonoma. The event was one of three headliners for the We Rise with Pride weekend and marked a symbolic reopening of the famous venue, which had been closed since 2023 due to financial troubles. Gary Saperstein, co-founder of Sonoma Valley Pride, said the weekend was a huge success, bringing the community together for a concert and drag show at the Sebastiani Theater on Friday, the dance on Saturday, and a Sunday Pride Festival in Sonoma Plaza. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia. The story began in 1978. A Bay Area artist named Gilbert Baker created a flag for the LGBTQ+ community that we know today as the Rainbow Pride Flag. Now, he wasn't sure if anyone would pick up on the idea that the huge 60-by-30-foot hand-dyed rainbow was really a flag. But they did. And today it's the eighth most recognized symbol in the world, a powerful symbol that's become so much of a threat to conservative politicians and religious leaders that some states have banned its display on public flagpoles and in classrooms. My first guest is no stranger to this show. We're happy to have back Charlie Beal, the president of the Gilbert Baker Foundation. Charlie, welcome back to the show. Hey, Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. It's great to be here.
Well, and I should also say happy Pride.
June 28th. Well, this is wonderful. For me, Pride doesn't start on June 1st, starts on June 2nd, Gilbert Baker's birthday.
That's right.
Which was a big day for us here. We had a, we had a big lawsuit in New York over the Stonewall flag. I'm sure you want to talk about that. But we have a second lawsuit, a federal lawsuit as well, over a flag, a rainbow flag ban in Hamtramck, Michigan. And we went to court with it to try to overturn the ban last summer. We didn't win at the local level. Now it's going to the Sixth Circuit in Cincinnati. And our lawyer was there on Gilbert Baker's birthday, you know, pleading our case to let them fly the rainbow flag again in Hamtramck, Michigan. So we'll see, we keep at it.
Yeah. Well, you know, for our listeners who may not be familiar with the Gilbert Baker Foundation, I mean, I hope most of them know the story because we've certainly talked about it enough on this show over the years. But give us a little background on what the foundation is now and what it's doing.
Well, the Gilbert Baker Foundation is named after Gilbert Baker, creator of the LGBTQ rainbow flag. And I was a good friend of Gilbert's for more than two decades. And he passed away unexpectedly in 2017. So some friends, my husband and I, just did what we could to keep the lights on in his apartment. We got his family to come collect a lot of his belongings. We packed up a lot of his artwork and his drag queen gowns and a lot of other beautiful flags and ephemera and shipped them all off to the GLBT Museum in San Francisco, mm-hmm. because that's where he expressed to me that's where he wanted his collection. So we did that, and that was followed by a big memorial for Gilbert in front of Stonewall on Flag Day in 2017, which was followed by suddenly Gilbert wrote a book, and what happened to the book? And suddenly the book is getting published, and one thing led to another. We did a big event, sort of a big promotion with Nike in 2019, their Be True promotion for gay athletes, which was the biggest one they've ever done. It was all Gilbert Baker shoes and Gilbert Baker colors and onward. And finally, Gilbert's sister, who was at that time managing what was his estate, mm-hmm. said, Charlie, can you take this over and do a real 501c3. So we did, and we became a foundation in 2020. And we have a great board of directors, many who were there. They were part of the committee for Gilbert's memorial. They're just, he had such a lot of support and love in our community and beyond our community. So with that board, we've been able to accomplish quite a lot. Exhibits like In Their Own Voices, which covers the creators of not only Gilbert's flag, but the creation of the trans flag or the More mm-hmm. Colors flag, mm-hmm. the Progress flag. So we wanted to honor those people. And another exhibit called Flag on the Map, where people from around the world submitted their photographs and stories about what the rainbow flag meant to them. And we collected these things and made an exhibit that has been seen in New York and San Francisco, in Paris, at the Paris Olympics, in Malta, at EuroPride. It's been shown over 20 times, recently in Guerneville, California. Thank you.
And let's not forget Napa Valley College.
And at Napa Valley College, yeah. Hosted by none other than the great Greg Moralia, where Cleve Jones joined us that night.
Oh, it was great.
The Greater Than AIDS quilt, yeah.
And we, and KRCB here, produced a little mini documentary about that event. I'll put a link to that on our website. You can go back and watch it. But you did a wonderful job sort of touring people through this exhibit, which now lives at Napa Valley College. We have a copy of it in our Pride Center. And so we use it for instruction. And of course, all of our LGBT students who visit the center get a chance to see it permanently.
I think it's wonderful because these stories, I mean, some of them are celebrations. Some of these stories are harrowing. You know, sure. Somebody in Pakistan trying to have a rainbow flag. And, you know, we had one guy in Iran who, it's not in the exhibit you have, but... He got beheaded by his own family for committing the crime of coming out of the closet. And so his friends would take the rainbow flag on their backs and dart in and out of the streets of Tehran as a way of protesting his death. So it's a very powerful symbol. It means a lot of things to a lot of people. So we're proud of that exhibit and what it does. But I got to tell you, Greg, the most important thing we're doing right now is a thing called Save the Rainbow Flag. It's been an initiative, an award-winning initiative that we undertook about 3 years ago when a friend called me up and said, Charlie, they want to ban the rainbow flag on public buildings up in Cold Spring, New York. And I'm thinking, Cold Spring, New York? This is a bourgeois Upper Westchester city north of New York City. And we got involved in it and we started research and we'd found there's already 10 of these flag bans in school districts and towns across the country. And we reached out to some legal groups, finally the ACLU, they came on board. And by the time we launched the initiative, about 4 months later, there were 30 bans. Mm-hmm. And then more and more, there's now over 64 of them. If you go to www.gilbertbaker.com and go to a little drop-down menu, it says Save the Rainbow Flag, you'll see a map, and it's an interactive map, and you click on any of those pins, and it'll tell you the story of what's going on in Sovan, California, and Sunol, California, and Huntington Beach, California, and Anne Arundel, Maryland, you know, and Roanoke, Beach, Virginia, these little towns, big towns, whole states now, Utah and Idaho. You can fly a rainbow flag on your house, you know, if they don't tear it down, but you cannot have it at a library, a public building, a city hall. So they're really trying to erase this symbol, and we're fighting back. And I'm really proud of the fact that we have overturned or prevented almost a dozen of these bans. Sometimes we're involved a little, sometimes we're involved a lot, always working with local activists to come up with a strategy, whether it's in the courts, whether in Sparta, New Jersey, people were getting in all a spin about, flags have to be neutral, let's just have the American flag and the New Jersey flag. And so we recommended to them, they created a committee that works with the city council and decides good flag, bad flag. So that was one solution. Another solution, I think in Sunol, right across the bay from San Francisco, a little town, they banned the flag in the schools. And, it was a 3-2 decision on the school board. Well, you know, we just consulted some with the locals there and they worked hard. And then come election time, they used this issue, and there is now a 3-2 majority in favor of the rainbow flag, and they overturned the ban. So that's a second strategy. Literally, go to the elections, the school board elections. You're town council elections, because when they're banning the rainbow flag, that's just the beginning. These people are trying to really restrict all kinds of speech, whether they're attacking our trans siblings or trying to censor school curriculum. And I'm sorry, Greg, I gotta say it. In the state of Utah, you can bring a Nazi flag into the classroom to teach about World War II, but you can't bring a rainbow flag in. Now you tell me that makes sense. I'm sorry, that is just cuckoo time. The people of Utah, I hope they work on their elections and fight back against this sort of blatant censorship that is really damaging. It's really damaging because once they ban the rainbow flag, you could go online. It's really easy to find studies. When the rainbow flag goes, hate crimes go up.
It's
you could draw a straight line. So we feel like we're on the forefront of this issue, and we're really proud of what we're doing.
Well, I'm glad you're doing it because it's very difficult for me to really fully comprehend why conservatives are so obsessed with this flag. And I get the power of it and what it symbolizes and the community that it symbolizes and all of the meaning that it symbolizes. But there really is a hateful obsession there. And it's so interesting to me because you can find the absolute opposite opinion. So I am very fortunate to work for a school district in Napa that embraces all people. And the Pride flag flies on every school flagpole from June 1st until June 30th. So at every high school graduation, when the thousands of people in the stadium who were there for the graduation ceremony turned to face the American flag to sing the Star Spangled Banner at the beginning of that ceremony, there they saw a Pride flag. And right. There was no protesting. There was nobody upset. The school board is absolutely 100% committed. I tuned into their monthly meeting, and all of them had a school district pride T-shirt on.
Well, I'm glad you live where you live, Greg.
Yeah.
What can
well,
I say? It's unfortunate that some communities really are so so bigoted.
Well, you can hop right over a mountain range, 25 minutes away to the city of Vacaville, where the mayor is adamantly opposed to flying the Pride flag.
Right.
Very homophobic and has prevented it. So it really does depend, as you said, on the politicians in power. And I agree with you. I think the best thing we can do is unseat those folks.
Yep. Well, and it's funny because as far as symbol goes, I mean, this is one of the eight most recognizable symbols in the world.
Yep.
Beyond the American flag, the British Union Jack, the French tricolor, the McDonald's arches, the Nike swoosh, the rainbow flag. it's that big. Everywhere in the world, people see it. They know what it means. They know what it's about. But I think one of the reasons it has become so ubiquitous and why it's everywhere and known everywhere is because when Gilbert created it, he created something what he called the rainbow of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was no L stripe or G stripe or B stripe or T stripe in his flags. Some newer flags are a little more identity oriented. His was more humanity oriented. To him, there's only one color, the color of humanity, or all colors are humanity in that flag. Meaning the whole spectrum of humanity is represented there. But it's meant to unify, and it's a cheerful, happy symbol. So when people go after it, you wonder what kind of feelings they have in their heart, Greg. It just makes me wonder.
it's really kind of, as you mentioned, crazy. And one of the big fights that you won that I think is extremely important as a symbol is defeating the Trump administration's ban of the Pride flag at the Stonewall Monument, the National Monument. Tell us about what happened there and then how you were able to defeat it.
Well, that's a really interesting thing, Greg. I went to the Stonewall Monument in, many times. I lived in New York City. And in 2019, for the Stonewall 50 celebration on Gilbert's birthday, we raised a flag there on a big white flagpole with an artist named Stephen Love Menendez. And Stephen, he decorates that park with all flags on every little upright on the fence. It's hundreds of beautiful rainbow flags. It's a stunning display. He's an artist, and he's done a great job. And eventually he got the Parks Department to put in a real flagpole where they could have a number of flags. They would fly Gilbert's 8-color original flag. They would fly the Progress flag. They would fly the standard 6-color rainbow flag, which is the sort of international symbol, with a Parks emblem on the middle. Mm-hmm. Until the night of February 9th, I get this phone call, woke me up in the middle of the night. I'm in Europe right now, so it's a bit of a time difference. And, you know, I get a call saying, Charlie, somebody took down the rainbow flag. And, you know, you might think it was a mistake or something, but no, the administration had decided that there could be no more rainbow flags at Stonewall Monument. Now, they had already taken down the rainbow flags at other parks.
Right.
But boy, did they poke the bear when they did that. Within 24 hours, they tried to lock the park to keep people out by late afternoon, but the community was there to literally use their bodies to prevent them from locking the park. There was a huge demonstration Tuesday night, which led to an even bigger one, a re-raising of the flag on Thursday, which led to, they literally broke in and pulled down the American flag, put a 8-color Gilbert Baker rainbow flag next to it, raised it up, and people just sort of stood vigil around the park for days to make sure that nobody took it down. And right about then, I got a call from a lawyer who said, listen, we want to sue the Parks Department over this. And I was a little nervous because having already done a federal lawsuit, I'm not going to get into the weeds on, you know, the difference between government speech and free speech. Mm-hmm. But they had an interesting angle. They had done their research and found that national parks allow any individual park to fly a flag that is historically significant. The Alamo Park can fly the Alamo flag. And southern states, they get to fly their Confederate flag.
Sure.
So they wanted to go to court to argue that the rainbow flag is a historically significant to the Stonewall Monument,
sure,
the only LGBTQ federally declared monument in the country. Now, when I say Stonewall Monument, I want your listeners to know it's a little triangular park across from the Stonewall Inn where the Stonewall riots happened in 1969. There's no giant monument there, but it is nonetheless precious ground and almost a holy space for queer people. And when they took that flag down, the community was just up in arms. Anyway, they filed the lawsuit, and after a lot of back and forth, the government backed down. They realized that they could not go to court and argue that the rainbow flag was not historically significant to Stonewall. And when I was interviewed for the New York Times about the lawsuit, I talked to this nice reporter there, and I read a passage from Gilbert's memoir, Rainbow Warrior. Mm. And it's about speaking about the moment he had the epiphany that our flag should be a rainbow flag. He had been out dancing with his friend Cleve Jones, who you know, and he had looked around at this diversity of this incredible crowd who he saw, you know, black, white, young, old, straight, gay, trans, everything, out one night just enjoying life. And that's when he had this epiphany that was, oh my God, this is the rainbow of humanity. And the first thought out of his head was, now the rioters at Stonewall would have a flag of their own. You know, the very first thought he had when he wrote, and it's in his memoir, and I encourage people to read that. And so to say that that flag is not historic, well, the government backed down. And on April 13th, the ruling came down, the flag went back up. And it's been there ever since. And the good part about this, Greg, is that now it is written into their policy. It isn't vague anymore.
That's
It,
great.
they have to have a rainbow flag. They have to provide the rainbow flag. They have to repair the rainbow flag. Yeah, so it's a big victory. We're really proud that we were the lead plaintiffs on this lawsuit. And I hope it inspires people to go to our website, gilbertbaker.com. I hope it inspires people to go there and donate a little bit. We're doing a
Sure.
big fundraising drive, Greg. I had to get that plug in there. Thank you.
Yeah, no, and because the fight continues, this isn't just about the flag at the Stonewall Monument. This is about things like banning the flag altogether across the country. And we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of the Pride flag in 2028, which is going to be here before we know it.
Yes.
What do you have planned? Let's talk about some positive things.
Oh boy, you really listen, Greg. Rainbow 50 is coming. It's a little over 2 years away. And I think the miracle is that in 2028, 50 years after Gilbert debuted that flag on June 25th, 1978, at United Nations Plaza in San Francisco. The 50th anniversary will be on Sunday, June 28th, to the day, another Pride Sunday, in San Francisco and around the world. So we got together and we tried to decide what we're going to do. And instead of doing a 2-mile-long rainbow flag like Gilbert Baker would do, we decided that we would try to inspire people around the world to create their own celebration of the 50th anniversary. So whether it's people in Sydney, Australia, doing rainbow drones at night and making a rainbow in the sky, or in San Francisco, the beautiful rainbow laser display they do, or in down in Rio de Janeiro once, they did a bunch of whole beach umbrellas in rainbow colors for like, I don't know, a quarter of a mile. So we're asking people in their Pride celebrations beginning in January of 2028 and going all year to celebrate the 50th anniversary in their way as an homage to Gilbert Baker, with the whole thing pretty much culminating on the 28th, because that is when Paris and London and Madrid and New York and Chicago and San Francisco, Seattle. There are a lot of people will have that celebration on that day. And it is our plan right now to debut and live stream a new documentary about Gilbert Baker that evening, to be directed by Steven Kayak, who's a well-known director at HBO. And then a large celebrity concert at the Castro Theater, produced by our own board member, Bruce Cohen, who produced Fashion Rocks and Music Rocks. I think he had Beyonce singing Over the Rainbow. I don't know. Anyway, I think it could be a big deal.
I think it would be a
Anyway.
big deal too.
And I'm proud to say that as of this week, the mayor Daniel Lurie of San Francisco has signed on for the city to be a big part of this. So we have big aspirations and big hopes, but like we said, this is really to inspire people everywhere to do what for us is a global visibility project that year in celebration of the 50th anniversary of Gilbert's beautiful creation.
Amazing. I can't wait. I will be there for that for sure. But I really want to encourage folks, Pride Month is always a good time to learn about our history and to dive into places like the GLBT Museum in San Francisco. And I will tell you that one of the exhibits there that always brings me joy and maybe a tear to my eye is the exhibit of the last remaining piece of that original rainbow flag that Gilbert and company created, that you mentioned that flew for the first time on June 25th of 1978. You can go to the museum and see that. And I really want to encourage listeners, if you have not been to the GLBT Museum on 18th Street, that you take an opportunity this summer to go and learn more about that flag. And I think you will be overcome by the power of that remnant.
Yeah, it was
Go ahead.
Yeah, it was. It's a. It was. Just so your listeners know, when they debuted the first flags, they were 60 feet long by 30 feet wide.
Yeah, two of them.
So they were big, spectacular displays. And both Gilbert and his friend Cleve Jones have both written about how they, you know, they could tell that when those flags went up and people started marching under them in that parade that year, that people just looked up and they knew instantly, this is it, this is my symbol, this is my flag. And, you know, so to find this essentially about a 30 foot by 10, 12 foot remnant that had been sort of lost and had ended up in Gilbert's sister's garage in Texas, and it was found totally by chance. But it's now in the museum, and we're very proud to have put it there. And we really do encourage people to see it because it's a beautiful, beautiful work of art.
Fantastic. Well, we've got like a couple seconds left. Once again, tell people where they can go to learn more about Gilbert Baker, his story, the foundation, and maybe that book you mentioned.
Yeah, go to www.gilbertbaker.com and take a look at our different initiatives. Please make a donation. I'm doing a lot of fundraising now. I got to keep plugging that because we are doing Rainbow 50, and I'm going to tell you, we're going to need all the help we can get. And take a look at our exhibits, take a look at our initiatives, and there's a lot of history there. You can read about the original colors, you can read about the origin story, and look at our exhibits, and I think people will be moved. Not a lot of, you know, everybody in the world, Greg, they know what the rainbow flag is, but a lot of people don't know who created it, and that's our legacy, is to teach people that.
And I appreciate you keeping that legacy alive. Charlie Beal, it's always a pleasure. Count us in as a media partner for the big 50th anniversary celebration. And we'll look forward to having you back on soon.
Okay, I will do that, Greg. Thank you so much.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Outbeat News in Depth here on KRCB Radio. I'm Greg Moralia. Well, our next guest is Court Vox. He's a trauma-informed certified sex and intimacy coach based in Los Angeles. His work is rooted in the belief that intimacy is not something we think about. It's something we experience through the body. He says many people move through life disconnected from sensation, desire, boundaries, pleasure, and even themselves. His work is about helping people return to that connection with greater awareness, honesty, and care. This month, Finn Dearheart introduces us to Court and talks more about his work and pride.
Welcome to Outbeat News. I'm Finn Dearheart, and I'm really excited today to speak with a very dear friend of mine and also just an amazing, all-around wonderful person and very skilled, I think, teacher in the space of men's work and bodies and or all people. And I'm really excited for him to be able to share. Welcome, Court Vox, to Outbeat News.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes.
I adore you. Thank you so much. I love seeing you.
Thank you. Well, tell us a little bit about your work. Tell us the mild but also a more fleshed out version of the Court Vox experience.
Yeah, you know, I'm really working in a lot of different facets of the erotic. You know, I offer retreats and I do one-on-one work with clients. I also have a couple online courses that I'm teaching right now, which has been super fruitful and exciting. And then, you know, in addition to my work with GBTQ men, I also work with women in private practice, but also with Back to the Body, which is a retreat company for women, which is also in the sexuality, sensuality realm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, between all of the things that I do, I stay pretty busy. I love working with all kinds of people, different orientations and gender expressions. I love teaching BDSM and power. I have an online course called Domcraft, which really teaches GBTQ men how to step more into their power through a BDSM lens with an in-person component at the end, if you so choose. And that's been super rich to teach and just to have conversations about power and the dynamics mm-hmm. that inherently exist always.
Yes.
And, you know, the realization that it's always there and where it's showing up in your life. I love to work with couples, you know, to see kind of transformation and connection. grow and people reconnect in that way. But yeah, if you have a curiosity around it, I probably know a thing or two about how to get there or how to teach you to access it.
Well, and I can vouch for that, having worked with you many times and witnessing how you work with people. It's really
Thank
a
you.
treat. Yeah, and what you're saying about power, I love that you brought that up, and I wonder if you could riff a little bit more about power. Because
Yeah,
people
I mean,
have this
it's.
idea that it's like, power is bad, or power is something we should want, or there's a power over and power under and power with your model. But a lot of people just don't really have a clear understanding about power. I'm curious what you would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you're going into, well, first of all, let's just name it for what it is. Power is a dynamic.
Yes.
And power doesn't exist until we give it, till we give it life, right? We have to agree to a power dynamic, whether it's conscious or not conscious. We have to step into it,
Yes.
and it doesn't exist without that, right? I think what's really valuable for people is when you start to study it, you go, oh my God, these dynamics are living in relationships with at work. They're living in relationship with my kids and my mom, in my
Yes.
partnership. And I wasn't even aware of it until right now. And, that's just from a place of relational power. But once you start layering in like systemic power, then you're like, yeah, that's in here too. And wow, we didn't think about that. And, the dynamics between men and women and race dynamics and there's just a lot of really rich things to think about. I think people often think of power over when they think of power and they think, ick, I don't want that. I don't want it for myself and I don't want to be that for somebody else. BDSM really asks, or DS rather, asks us to look at power from a perspective of this was actually asked for.
Right.
Like, I agreed to this dynamic. I want this. And so from a person kind of exploring their power, the question then becomes, okay, this is wanted from me. Do I want this? Oh, there's something inside me that really wants to play with this. And can I start to access this in a way that starts to be a little more freeing? Because it's almost like submissives or bottoms and tops, dominance. They have like the same task. It just goes in a different way. We have to release a lot of cultural narratives and social norms in order to move in whatever direction we're going. And so it does require a level of surrender on both ends because we're surrendering all of this stuff that we've been taught around. I'm not supposed to like to hit somebody. I'm not
Right.
supposed to like to see somebody in pain. I'm not
Right.
supposed to like inflicting pain. I'm not supposed to like telling somebody what to do in such a direct manner. And so it's like, yep. And also, that person agreed to that and they really love it too. So, can we meet each other in the middle? And when we can, when we do, it's such a fun, intimate, connecting experience. And I think that is the most shocking piece for people is, wow, this is not that scary. This is
Totally.
actually really beautiful.
Well, and it highlights something too that I think is one of the reasons why I personally enjoy working with you, is I'm a counselor, and I know the listeners know that from just some of the conversations that we've had. But working with a lot of, I would say the biggest demographic of my group is working with queer and gay identified cisgender men is the bulk of the work. And their unconscious perceptions of power, I'm generalizing, but about power, but also living in bodies that house power because of cultural norms and normativity, but also living in bodies that are, it's intersectional because they're also, many of them, been victimized. And what a weird dissonance that creates for men. And so helping them locate those fractures and fault lines and explore what that is and to own the power that they actually want requires going into pain emotionally.
Well, maybe not pain necessarily, but discomfort for sure, of like, ooh, this is a real scratchy. And sometimes actually physical pain. I think what's interesting about doing somatic work, embodied work, is that you're not just thinking about it, it's actually happening. And the way that we feel and resonate with specific qualities in any type of play, but specifically this one, since we're talking about it, it's really visceral and it's so in the moment. It's hard to not acknowledge it, right? And the mind can play tricks. You're like, that's just me having a thought or a fantasy. But when you're in it and you're faced against a real obstacle and you still have the desire, it's sort of like, okay, well, there's two things present here. There's the obstacle and then there's desire. Do I want to sit with the obstacle or do I want to overcome it because I actually want this? And it's a feeling in the body instead of a thought or a concept.
Totally. And I think it's interesting in a political context as we think about queer bodies and we're thinking about pride coming up and what that means for people. There's all of, very different meanings for everybody, but in the context of the body and power, like what that means politically and especially right now. I'm curious if you have any thoughts about that, and then we can kind of segue into thinking about pride.
It's interesting because I look at like the various times in my life and my views around pride. And like when I first came out, pride was everything to me. It was like so exciting and I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many people here. And I also had judgments, right? Of like, oh, this is like way too gay for me over here. And this, all kinds of things were out. But I remember it just being very alive for me. And then kind of like throughout like growing older, feeling kind of apathetic towards it at times. Like, why do we need this? Like, pride is a year-round kind of thing. Can't we just be out and proud all year round? And I'm like really in this place now of like choose your own adventure. Like, you know what? Let people celebrate how they want to celebrate. If you want to go have a big party, you want to do a party at your house, or maybe you feel like you are so out and proud all year round that the big spectacle at this one time of year isn't really necessary. Like, but I do think specifically in this time, whether you're doing it for a weekend or you're really out and proud all year round, it's so important because our rights are really being targeted, not just from a local level, but from an international perspective. And I hate seeing all these countries go backwards, including ours, in terms of rights allocated to us and rights being removed, where, just to be gay is criminalized, whether that's imprisonment or, being killed. That's really serious. And then to, actually empower your neighbors and friends and family to turn you in because they could be imprisoned is, the visceral feeling in my body is really strong of like it just feels so gross. And in that way, we have a privilege. I live in this LA bubble, and it's very, I don't know, I forget sometimes like how great we have it here. Of I get to walk down the street holding my partner's hand and kissing him and being affectionate, just being ourselves, right? And that's not available everywhere. And so as like a 13-year-old living in a city in a different country or even in ours, seeing that happen is like there's a space for me to go. There's a place for me that's safe. There's a place for me to be myself eventually. I had that too. And just looking back, like how important that is, and it was.
Totally. You actually, and I want my listeners to check out your website and to sign up for your newsletter. I think you send out really beautiful newsletters, and just
Thank
recently you
you.
put out one about pride and visibility being so important. That's how we find each other.
There's a lot of talk about cruising right now, right? It's like
Is there?
it's come back to the mainstream because Sniffies is kind of this cruising app, and Leo Herrera has talked a lot about cruising, and it was
Right, the
like,
writer.
yeah. And like this discussion around, we kind of used to find each other in these ways where we had to give each other a glance or like that look of recognition of like, yeah, I know, and you know that I know kind of thing. But when you're out, when you're out in a queer space or a gay space, that look of recognition isn't as necessary, right? It was like that was a form of survival, and it still is a form of survival for a lot of people. And It's become more of a like a fun pastime at this moment, right? Of like, this is just something that gets my rocks off and it's exciting, which is all wonderful. But I think the origin of it was survival of like, this is how we meet people. And
Totally.
now, I mean, to see people on social media who are trans and who are bisexual, who are in throuples and who are gay couples traveling the world, it's like, wow. Even the amount of gay and queer musicians that exist. I was a musician in my 20s, and there was like nobody really. There was a few. And I was in a boy band when I was 19, and this was 1999 to like 2003. And I remember one of the boys from one of the bands, he got outed. And I remember my manager coming to me and saying, like, none of you are gay, right? And we were like, nope, nope.
Wow.
It was a big deal at the time. And now it's like, we got so many beautiful beautiful and talented queer artists who are really like making a commotion and creating incredible music. And so the landscape has changed a lot. And to be able to see ourselves there in positions of power, in positions of creativity, in positions of leadership, it's like, we used to have to like claw for a seat at the table. And it's like now we have our own tables. Like
Yeah.
we had to claw to create our own tables, to create our own spaces. And there's some established ones now, right? And in the newsletter, I said, heaven forbid we take a break. We let our guard down and just be for a while. But the reality is it feels like as soon as we stop, it's like something else, a wave comes back. And yeah, and so in that way it feels really valuable and important to continuing to just be.
100%. And I think that this is also a way to think about how your work serves the community. And this could be a place, we have just a few minutes left. We could speak about the collaboration that we're doing this fall because we're working with people at the body level and their ability to work through the stuff that prevents them from just being, and finding a space that's this juicy retreat space to be with other people in a process. And so often men will ask me, I'm dealing with people who are playing with the idea of going to retreat, or it's not been on their mind, but they're like, when will I know if it, I'm just thinking, when you go though, and you get to be with other people in a process and all the stuff that you've been carrying around, and you think it's just in your head, and you get to do this with other people, it's such a lift of the burden of shame, I think. So if you'll just spend maybe a few minutes talking about the retreat, and then we can wrap up.
So first of all, I'm really excited to teach with you again. It's been a couple of years. Connect was really a birth from a place of wanting to offer a space for queer men to connect in erotic ways, but not necessarily sexual ways. I think we have so many outlets for sex, and I just so many there's so many outlets for gay men to have sex. There's not a lot of outlets for intimacy. There's not a lot of outlets for learning of what intimacy means or what it feels like, and even different ways to connect. I think sometimes, people seek sex because they're wanting affection or they're wanting attention. And like the option that we have is sex. And so what would it look like to be in a space to be like, I actually just want to be in community. I want to be in enveloped in a place where I can speak my truth, where people can actually speak from a place of depth instead of like, what'd you have for dinner?
Totally.
What are you doing, over the summer kind of thing, which
Yeah.
all great questions, but they don't
Are
like,
they?
I mean, I really have a hard time with those questions
Are
these
they doing like
days.
ah, nothing. Not doing
Nothing. But
anything.
to get to create a space where people can actually get under those questions and start to ask different ones that solicit different answers. And that doesn't just include, verbal. It includes with our bodies, like how we move,
Totally.
how we ask, how we create consent practices with our words and also our body language. These are like really valuable and also They're not taught.
Not at
No,
all.
we're, a lot of us are like still having the same sex that we had when we first came out, and we're like, why am I bored? Or why is this not giving me, uplifting me anymore?
Or
So,
ever.
or ever, right? And so, you know, a lot of the men that I work with are in a place of like change and shifting. You know, they've done quite a bit of work, you know, podcasts and going to events, working with therapists, which is all so wonderful. And it kind of has led to this point here, which is like there's something else that I would like to step into. And it's sort of like one of the last pieces of saying, okay, it's time for me to step into an embodied container with other gay men. And when I do the intake form, one of the questions is, what are you most afraid of or most nervous about? And inevitably, I would say, you know, 85% of the responses are, I'm terrified to be in a group of gay men.
100%.
And it's like really real of what am I going to do? Am I going to be judged? Am I going to be liked? You know, when we come out, we're coming out from a place where we had to hide ourselves to survive. And we think, oh my God, I'm going to be enveloped by this community. And it's not the case for a lot of people. There's a lot of cruelty. There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of body shame and dysmorphia in our community, a lot of racism, homophobia, misogyny. And, you know, it gets pushed out on each other. And so in the spaces that I create, I actually am like naming all those things. This exists here, guys. It exists in your bodies. It exists in our communities. How can we meet each other from a place of kindness and generosity instead? And that's a practice. That is a practice. And, you know, it's not always easy. But when you say, no, the intention here is to meet each other with kindness and generosity, maybe I can't meet this person in the way that this exercise has been laid out, but here's something else that I can do. I can meet you in this way. And it's also starting to ask people to think about, instead of going directly to a no, like what's the and or the or
Totally.
of, yeah, I'm not sexually attracted to you, or we're not going to get married. We're not gonna, you know, we're not even going to have sex. And like, I see that you're a human being across from me. Like, how can I connect with you in a way that feels human, that feels generous to both of us, where we walk away going, that was lovely. Thank you. And, you know, in a group space of like 21 to 30 people, which is what Connect will be, Camp Connect in Mendocino, is something happens in a field energy, which is, it's almost like a jello. It's not a fixed organism. It's constantly kind of moving and morphing, and everybody's participation actually affects the movement of the entire group. And so, you know, if there's somebody that's having a really hard time and grieving something over here and they share that, inevitably they're speaking for someone who can't yet voice those words. If somebody is feeling like they don't belong and they're retreating from a somatic perspective, somebody might point out to them, hey, I really feel like you're not participating and you don't want to be here. And they're like, oh my God, I do want to be here, but I feel like I don't belong and I feel really uncomfortable here. And so it gives this opportunity to speak into some of the things that are harder for us to do maybe in day-to-day life.
Totally. Or there's no context for those sorts
Yeah.
of inquiries.
But the real kind of mission is pleasure, fun, playfulness, connection, community. Those are the goals. You know, those are the intentions. And like a lot happens on the way to the forum, right?
And this is a great place for us to tie up too, because we'll leave
Yeah.
people this little taste of what they might get. That sounds like a really beautiful opportunity to explore.
Yeah, you know, this retreat center, Spirit Camp, it's in the Redwoods, it's on the coast. We're gonna have a day of like river swimming with a sauna. It's just like the breeze that comes through is so wonderful. And it's a gay-owned retreat center, which I love. The food is going to be fantastic. It's just a beautiful space. Just like, all of the other stuff is wonderful too, but the space itself is pretty inspiring. Yeah, and you get to work with me and you, which, we haven't done in a while, and I feel like we kind of have our own magic that we create together.
Definitely.
So yeah, I hope some of the people on this that are listening will come join us.
I did too. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing all that you shared about your work and about your thoughts about power and pride. And people who are listening, this short segment just doesn't do justice to what I know of Court and of his work and just the heart that I experience with you. So I hope that you will check out Court's website, thebodyvox.com. That is THEBODY, V as in Victor, OX.com. On that site, you can see events, you can see access to the retreat that we're talking about, Camp Connect. You can see all these beautiful pictures that he's referring to, and also more about his work. Thank you so much for coming. Is there any other place that people could look at, find you? Would you like people to know your Instagram handle or?
Court Vox on Instagram or The Body Vox on Instagram. I have two. I usually post to both. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great to see you.
And that wraps up our hour. Be sure to tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Radio's Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greer. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB Radio. In the meantime, happy Pride and have a great week. Thanks for spending your Sunday night with us. Outbeat News in Depth is hosted and produced by Greg Moralia. Our shows are available for on-demand play anytime on our website at outbeatnews.com and on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and now on iHeartRadio. Find links to subscribe at outbeatnews.com.
I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to. So I give it up to you.
You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter. But I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains. We gon' walk it out and move mountains. And I rise up, I rise like the day. I rise up, I rise unafraid. I rise up and I
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCBFM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCBFM Rohnert Park and KRCGFM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Beale Street Caravan is next.